Welcome to the Outdoor Dream Jobs podcast. I'm Allie Carr.
And I'm Jenna Selmer. We run Basecamp, an online community of nearly 20,000 outdoor industry insiders who share jobs, industry contacts, and advice. And we're super close to that big milestone of 20,000. When we get there, we'll be doing a huge giveaway. So make sure you're in the group so that you're eligible and inviting your friends as well.
We also are booking up sponsorships for the newsletter. If you don't currently subscribe to Basecamp Weekly, definitely get in there. We have a free version. We also have a premium version with about quadruple the job listing salary information as we can get it, and remote jobs. That's only $3 per month. And we are booking up sponsorships for the newsletters. Currently, we have about 6,000 savvy job seekers and people currently in the industry reading our newsletter, and we gain about 500 subscribers each month. So this is a fast growing newsletter, and you know, super exciting. So let us know if you are interested in a sponsorship.
And this week on the podcast, we have a super jam-packed interview with Ted Forbes. He is the ship's counselor at Cotopaxi, which is a job title that really intrigued me. He tells us what it means. It's very cool. And he also talks about the many positions that Cotopaxi dropped earlier this month, as well as why you should apply for them. It sounds like an excellent workplace. He is a veteran in the industry and has a lot of tips for people. And Cotopaxi, I didn't know this. They have only been around since 2013, so they've made huge move since then and would be a very cool company to work for.
Yeah, so ship's counselor. So he's like sort of technically the CEO, but goes by ship's counselor. Is that right?
No, he's more of an HR function and helping people to develop. And he also deals with any issues people have, feedback, if they want to accelerate their career. It is a super cool position that more companies should consider.
Very cool. Love to hear it. Okay. So let's get into the jobs. We have some spicy ones for you this week.
Mm-hmm.
The first job that we're going to talk about is at People for Bikes, an organization that we reference a lot in our newsletter and across our jobs platforms because they are a fantastic nonprofit working in the bike world. They are based in Boulder, Colorado, and they're looking for a junior graphic designer. This is an entry-level position, but they would love to see somebody who maybe has internship experience, but, you know, definitely apply regardless. You know, you should always put yourself out there, even if you don't fully fit into the sort of job description box that they've created. And the pay is $40,000 to $45,000, so not bad for an entry level position.
We also have a job from Kelty. They are based in Colorado as well, in Broomfield. And Kelty makes all the gear. They do backpacks, tents, blankets, all the stuff. I actually really like their stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's at Costco sometimes, so that's fun. But they are hiring a marketing coordinator up in Broomfield, and they have a whole team, but you're going to be really helping with social media and content creation and getting some asset needs and then working in some of that delivery area. So actually doing the posts and engaging with the customers. We are not sure what this position pays. There is a new law, very exciting in Colorado, where employers must tell you the salary. So we are expecting Kelty to update this, and we'll put that in our show notes, but not sure quite yet. But generally speaking, a really cool position for somebody with only around 2 years of experience. So maybe this could be your second job.
Yeah. And just a note on that, on the salary thing. So if you are a company based in Colorado, note that new law, please post your salary so that you are within legal guidelines. But also know that when you do post your salary, you're also eliminating that wage gap for minorities, for women. So it's not only, you know, you're not just doing it to be lawful, but also for, you know, really good cause and to help humanity. Thank you to everyone who already does that. We applaud you. The next job that we have is with Newell Brands, and they own Coleman, they own Marmot, and a handful of other companies. This job is with Marmot. It's a social media manager based in Rohnert Park, California, which is pretty close to Santa Rosa. If you're not familiar with California, that's a little bit north of San Francisco. So really, really beautiful area. And this job, social media manager, you know, they're looking for someone with 3 to 5 years of experience. And you would basically be helping to develop engaging content across the social channels. You know, you should have a strong understanding of the different social platforms, creating strategy for how to put the content out there across those channels, and a lot more included in this position. But a great job in the outdoor industry here with Marmot.
Mm-hmm. An organization called Camp Elso is hiring in Portland, Oregon, and they are a nonprofit that they're based in environmental education. They are led by Black and Brown folks. They try to serve Black and Brown folks and really get children as well as adults outside learning life sciences and nature, understanding the environment, climate change, all of these wonderful things that are really going to help advance environmental justice and make sure everyone knows cultural history a little bit better. So it's a really fantastic organization, and they are looking for a combination executive assistant and operations manager. It is paid at $35 an hour, which is a great salary. It's about, doing math in my head, around $70,000 per year, and it is a full-time position. The person is going to be doing a lot of different stuff. So they're going to be working with the leadership team. They're going to be doing some office manager stuff. They're also going to be doing some communication stuff, and they're going to be also out in the field talking to the actual people that you're serving and the administrative staff. So you're really taking on a lot of, I believe, a lot of roles from the executive director in this position, and advocating for youth in the Black and Brown communities getting outside. So very exciting there. They are fairly flexible on the qualifications, except for there is one line where they require a minimum of 3 years of experience working with or volunteering for Black, Indigenous, POC-led or culturally specific organizations. So I thought that was very interesting that they noted it, and actually great as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Also in Portland, Oregon, Adidas is hiring a slew of interns. So they have basically they open up their 2021 internships in January, and then they will be hiring for a 12-week summer internship. The application process opens now, and the 12-week program is from May or June through August. They're really looking for undergraduates, graduates, MBA students, people who have a strong passion for sport and who will be graduating in winter 21 or spring 22. And the internships are across all sorts of different categories: marketing and communication, design, innovation, finance, digital. The list goes on and on. Those are just a few that I mentioned. So definitely take a look. And if you're not on the West Coast, you might consider checking out Reebok's careers website, because they are also hiring a bunch of interns, and they're based in Boston, Massachusetts. So lots of internship opportunities for 2021. I will note that Adidas closes January 31st, so make sure you get your application in there this month, and Reebok closes February 14th. So make sure you send them a Valentine before then.
Generally speaking, a lot of companies are bringing out their summer internship applications right now, so I would do a search for those if you're interested in working somewhere during the summer. We've been throwing a bunch of those into the newsletter as well. Our last job today is with the Mid-Peninsula Regional Open Space District, and that is in the South Bay region of California. They are looking for a public affairs specialist. What this organization does is there is a green belt of space that needs to be protected, and that's what they're out there doing. They need somebody to basically be the voice of this organization. You're going to be doing a lot of communications-based roles, media releases, you're going to be doing newsletters, looks like you're updating the website, and also looks like you are responsible for social media, as well as some community engagement stuff. And that does sound like a lot of work. However, the salary backs it up in this case, $94,000 to $118,000. So if you are in that Northern California region and you have communication skills, this would be a great way to combine those with a conservation lens.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's South Bay near San Francisco. So really cool opportunity and some beautiful land there, beautiful mm-hmm. open space.
Awesome. Well, we're going to go head over to talk to Cotopaxi Ships Counselor now.
Okay, let's do it.
My name is Ted Forbes, and I am based in Camas, Utah, which is a little town about 12 miles east of Park City up in the Wasatch Mountains. And I am currently working as ship's counselor for Cotopaxi. That's my favorite title at Cotopaxi. I'm also head of people operations, which is our HR function, Jenna.
Just tell us a bit about Cotopaxi, what you're all about.
Well, Cotopaxi is a company that was actually started back in 2013 by two entrepreneurs, Davis Smith and Stefan Jacob. The name of the company is derived from the name of a volcano in Ecuador. And Davis had done his mission in Ecuador when he was a young man and was very captivated by that area. And went on to get, as did Stefan, to get MBAs from the Wharton School and had a number of different entrepreneurial startups. And ultimately landed on Cotopaxi, which is a company that has a dual mission of selling in a number of different channels outdoor goods, specifically things like soft goods, fleeces and down jackets and backpacks and the like. But the unique aspect of it is that it's a B corporation, meaning that we're very focused on our impact socially. So Cotopaxi has a foundation, and 1% of our revenue, and we also solicit donations from customers, go into that foundation. And then each year we disperse funds, both from our 1% and the money that we've raised, and it goes to do good around the world. And do good is our mantra. We've given over $300,000 to people to alleviate poverty. We've supported more than 80 refugee families. To give them literacy education. We do things like providing malaria-preventing bed nets in Latin America. So all in all, we are a company that's all about doing good as well as running a profitable business.
Wow. I knew a lot of those achievements that you mentioned, but I actually didn't know that you only started in 2013 and were able to amass that sort of presence and such a great reputation in such a small amount of time.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal what we've been able to get done in a relatively brief period of time. And I think it's because the brand resonates with our customers. You know, we're very colorful in a lot of what we offer, which is a bit of a break from the norm in the outdoor industry. But I also think that, you know, the generation that is our customer base, which is largely the, you know, the millennial Gen X, Y, and Z, the idea of aligning with a company that has a strong social mission is extraordinarily attractive. And that's a big part of who we are. So I think when people buy products from Cotopaxi, they feel like they can contribute towards doing good in the world. And that creates a little bit of a momentum play in the sense that people love the brand and what it stands for, but they also love the brand and what we do.
As an elder millennial, I can confirm all of that. I love your fun colors. But ship's captain, what does this mean? What do you actually do for the organization?
Well, it's ship's counselor, Jenna.
And
that's okay. It's for anyone out there who's a Star Trek fan, you might remember that there was one of the Star Trek expeditions was called Star Trek Voyager. And that was the one where Jean-Luc Picard was the captain. But one of the characters on that show was a woman named Deanna Troi. And Deanna's job with the Starship Enterprise was to be the ship's counselor. She was the person that people could go to for support and questions and advice and the like. And I spent the first year of my time working with Cotopaxi helping to create an internal HR organization. We had outsourced that as the company had begun to grow, but we'd gotten to a point where we needed in-house capability. So Davis and the team brought me on to do that. And after the first year of doing that, we had scaled up and brought in another colleague of mine, Dusty Hardy, who's wonderful. And we've built, you know, a lot of the capability that we were intending to do in the first year. And so at the end of last year, Davis encouraged all of us to think about rehiring ourselves. And I thought about that and said, what would I like to do in the coming year and what might add the most value? And I came up with this notion of ship's counselor. So I'm a bit of a career coach. I'm a bit of a trusted advisor. I like to think of myself sometimes as being the conscience and the coach of the executive team. And it's just really an incredibly rewarding role for someone like myself, who frankly is a little bit towards the tail end of their career and is now in a position to be able to carve out what I want to do.
Yeah, so that sounds extremely important to have. It sounds like you're both a formal feedback mechanism and a platform for professional development, both of which are paramount for organizational success. So would you say that building up the HR team in a position maybe like you have is really important for a growing business. Where does that fall in the hierarchy?
You know, that's a great question, Jenna. And I'll give you an anecdote. Davis did a post on LinkedIn not too long ago about me. And I was flattered that he did it. Not that I'm trying to toot my horn or anything. But one of the things that Davis said in that post was that one of the mistakes that he had made as an entrepreneur was not hiring a strategic HR leader sooner. And I think that's a very telling comment, because many entrepreneurs get into building a business and they're focused rightly on how do I deliver product? How do I win customers? How do I differentiate myself? How do I build financial momentum that's going to allow me to sustain the business? And it's all focused on what I would call business stuff. And So, you know, that's what entrepreneurs do. That's what they're good at, and that's what they should be doing. But there comes a point in time when you really need to invest in the people. And I think Cotopaxi is a unique company because of the mission-driven focus that we have and the fact that, you know, all of our employees are incredibly well aligned with that. But when we got to the point where we had 50 or 60 people, we started to experience some of the organizational stress factors that you'd expect when you get to that critical mass. And there was nobody, because we had outsourced it, there was nobody in place to address it. So that's where I came in. And it's been a good journey. I do think that, you know, notwithstanding the fact that I am, you know, spent the last 20 years of my career in that functional area, I think it is something that companies need to pay super attention to, because although it's a trite phrase that, you know, people are your greatest asset, it's true. And if you don't pay attention to the people and how you hire them and onboard them and develop them and reward them and give them careers and make them feel like they're going somewhere in their life, then, you know, they get itchy feet and they look around. And we enjoy a very low attrition rate because we've got a company that's very sticky. And I think we do the people stuff well. And I think we'd do it even better if we'd started sooner.
I think that gave people a lot of insight into working at Cotopaxi. But what else can you tell us about the day-to-day for those employees? Like, what's it like to go to work every day? What are some perks?
Well, you know, it's a great question. And I'd have to say, like, what it was like before Corona and what it's...
Yeah, it's going to be totally different. And maybe you can go into a little bit of both, because the world going forward is going to be, you know, a joint kind of like mesh of what was and what will be.
Yeah, for sure. So let's start with before, because I think that's, you know, the majority of the history of the company. We've got a company that, you know, we're a startup. We're based in downtown Salt Lake City. We are in an old converted renovated bank building. Some of our conference rooms, one of my favorite conference rooms is the old vault, which has incredibly thick concrete walls. And it's kind of a funky room. It's an old sort of, you know, late Victorian architecture, open seating. And what we had, you know, before Corona was we had a buzz of activity. There was a retail store on the entry level, the street level. You came up a very old set of stairs into a great big room with arched windows and Victorian chandeliers and desks scattered all over the place and all this old bank appliances that I mentioned a moment ago. And there was a real buzz of people, you know, just folks working together, talking, having meetings, you know, the kind of buzz you'd feel. You'd walk around the corner and there would be the galley where people would be eating lunch or having coffee and talking and solving problems. And, you know, go up the next level of stairs and there's the design team working away in a really funky old brick lined building. A lot of young people, a lot of very focused on the mission people, and, you know, designing and building and ultimately selling and delivering great products. So we had kind of that buzz going on. And then mid-March happened and Corona came along and we all said, well, we got to shut down the headquarters. So we went remote. And what's been really fascinating is that, you know, we've been able to largely maintain the connectivity and the buzz through using Zoom and Slack and all the tools that everybody else is using. But I think it's because we had that strong, strong foundation that we could build on in terms of the vibe of the company. And we've worked really hard, Jenna, to ensure that as we bring new people into it, that we still maintain some of that vibe and that jazz. We do a monthly all-hands meeting. We had a great Christmas party at the end of the year, where we had breakout rooms and we had a Jeopardy session and we had a Wheel of Fortune session and we had a magician and you know, a lot of fun stuff, and there were prizes. And so we've really been over backwards to try to maintain that sense of connectivity and communication and fun, in spite of the fact that we're geographically dispersed now. And then the last point that I'd put on it would be that we've also taken a very intentional decision as a result of what we learned from working virtually to go on into a remote first environment. So we now have people who are on our headquarters team, but are located in places like North Carolina and Oregon and the like, because we've recognized that you can work remotely and you can be effective and you can have a culture and you can get things done, and it opens up our marketplace for talent very significantly.
Glad to hear you say that. That's probably the biggest question a job posting will get in the Basecamp group is, could this be done remotely? So what you're saying is that Cotopaxi is open to that possibility for the right hire, in most positions at least.
Absolutely. Now, some of the positions, obviously, you know, we have retail stores and people have to be there physically. And
certainly,
you know,
yeah.
our warehouse and distribution facility, I mean, you got to be there in person. But, you know, to work on the marketing team or to work on the product design team or what have you, you know, at this point, we've really flipped our understanding of how work happens upside down and said, we can do this. And it's working.
Well, it's great to hear that you guys can evolve sort of on a dime like that. That's really great to know about a workplace as well. So, Ted, I'm starting with you this week. I'm asking a couple of questions that I ask in every job interview personally. And one of those is, how do you develop your team professionally?
I'll start with every all hands meeting that we hold, we do some sort of intellectually challenging exercise. And sometimes it might be, you know, Davis talking about, I remember he did a session on change management during the time that we were migrating to a remote environment, and the concept of working through a change curve and how you feel about it as an individual, how you feel about it collectively. It was a great learning session. All kinds of really cool Ask Me Anything sessions. I've talked about things like career development. And so we've really taken on the notion of a leader as teacher model, Jenna, where our executive team and our, you know, more senior people are able to pull folks together and share their perspectives on important ideas that we then bake into the business. So we're doing our development work as sort of an in-house effort and a collective effort. I think there's a lot of runway ahead of us on it. Certainly, that's an area that I'm focused on in this year now, 2021, of building out a more formal learning agenda. But we've had things in the past. We've had lunch and learn sort of sessions, and then the other thing in my role as the ship's counselor is I spend a lot of time talking to folks on the team about their career development and where they want to go and how they get there and what kind of skills they need to develop and how they're going to go about doing that. So it's a bit of a village approach at this point, and we got a lot of work to do yet to get it more programmatic. But those are some of the ways we accomplish it.
So if an employee came to you and said, I think I could be an asset for this team, but I don't know maybe this coding skill, would that be something you helped facilitate?
Yeah. I mean, if somebody came to me and said, I want to learn coding, I'd put them in touch with Frank Westfall, who runs our IT organization, and say, talk to Frank about that. So I'm a big believer, Jenna, philosophically, in the notion that it's not a company's responsibility to design and deliver a career path for people. It's up to people to decide where they want to go and to understand what are the skills and capabilities and what I call resume enhancing experiences that they need to develop to get them where they want to go. And then it becomes a dialogue between that individual employee and his or her manager to have a conversation that says, how do I carve out a plan that's going to help me build those skills and capabilities and perspectives so that I can indeed move in the direction that I want to go?
Yeah. And, you know, even in workplaces I've experienced that had a formal channel for professional growth, I found that making it known that you want to take a certain path or that you have a certain goal is really the best way to get there anyway. So taking that initiative to say, here's a roadmap, please help me with this, that saves your manager time. And they're much more likely to want to help you as well. So it's just a good idea anyway.
Totally agree. In fact, I had two conversations yesterday with employees late yesterday afternoon in which that was exactly the takeaway was, you know, what you've got to do is you've got to make your own luck and you've got to position yourself to be where opportunity, when opportunity arises, people know that that's what you're looking for. So there's a lot of self-marketing that goes into it, but it's also, I think, an opportunity to be introspective and realistic and pragmatic and understand that there are things that you need to develop in terms of your own personal skill sets in order to get to where you want to get.
And nobody has ever scoffed at Moxie, so can't go wrong.
I can tell you, I mean, look, I've been an executive in companies from, you know, Cotopaxi has 100 people, and I've been an executive at United Airlines, and there were 85,000 people there. You know, just a vast difference in scale and scope. But what you're looking for is people who get out there and try to make stuff happen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, we know that diversity has been a hot topic for, you know, in 2020, but what has Cotopaxi been doing and what are you looking to do in the future to achieve a bit more diversity, especially in leadership positions? And I have a feeling that your philosophy toward remote work will be helping in this area as well.
Yeah, it totally does. And we really are starting at the top. You know, we believe that the tone at the top is what sets the direction for the broader company. So when we look to hire people at a, you know, director, VP level, or also board members, we're very focused on making sure that we're finding the best people who present, you know, diverse credentials, diverse perspectives, and diverse backgrounds. So it's, you know, I will tell you straightforwardly, it's an area that we have a lot of room to grow in. And we're, you know, we acknowledge that. But I think the way that we approach it is in, we have this thing called the rule of threes, where anytime we hire, we want to have three candidates who equally could do the job.
Okay.
And so when we do our rule of threes presentation to members of the executive team, because we're small enough that every interview just about will, or excuse me, every candidate will have an interview with Davis and Stefan and other members of the executive team, we tell our hiring managers, we want to see diverse candidates. And so that, you know, that puts the onus on them to, you know, not only find three people who could do the job, but to find three people who present the kind of diverse portfolio of perspectives and backgrounds and ethnicities and culture and the like, so that we can make that choice. And it's, you know, it's not easy. Let me be very straightforward. Let me say it differently. The remote thing has opened up a lot of possibilities for us now because, you know, being based in Salt Lake, we are not as diverse as the rest of the country in a lot of different dimensions. And so we have to work harder to find folks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, having said that, you have a ton of open positions right now. And I'm super excited about it. I'm also super curious, why now? Was 2021, was the new year significant or what happened?
Well, we're growing. And, you know, we had a better year financially than we expected in 2020. That mirrors the experience of a lot of companies. You know, we came into the first quarter, we had a big business plan, the world slammed shut due to Corona, and we reforecast and we were optimistic that we might remain flat, you know, versus 2019. That was kind of our initial budget position. And as we got into it, we started to see that the business picked up and we were doing better. So we had a good year last year and we're very bullish on this year. And one of the things that we're doing is hiring very strategically to drive this growth agenda. So the reason is very simple. We have positions open because we're growing the business right now.
It's very exciting. Your team did do an excellent job in 2020. In particular, I saw Annie out there killing it. So I'm really excited. We're going to be interviewing her as well. Are there any positions in particular that you'd like to tell us about that kind of excited you?
Well, I think there are a couple. You know, if you look on our careers site, you know, scroll to the bottom of Cotopaxi.com and you'll find our careers and click on that. It'll take you to the open jobs like any company would do. But I think there's a couple that I'd focus in on. One would be, you know, we're currently looking for a director of e-commerce position. And another is that we're looking for an associate product developer position. And those are two very different positions, Jenna. The product developer position as an associate is a more junior role, and we're looking for somebody to come in and, you know, kind of bring some skills. Certainly, you know, we want someone who's got some experience, but who also has the willingness to learn and work very closely with the different managers in our product design and development group, and to be part of the team. So that's more of what I would call an entry-level position. You know, we're looking for 1 to 3 years of work experience. Ideally, someone who's, you know, had a background in, you know, designing apparel or backpacks or the like, and has some, you know, good skills in things like Adobe Illustrator and Photoshop and the like. So we're looking for a set of skills that would say, come join our team as we, part of our growth agenda for the business is to increase the array of products that we're offering in the marketplace. And so this is an opportunity to come in and learn how we do that, be part of the team, and to really grow into the role.
And it sounds like fresh ideas are absolutely welcome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we'll come back to that because, you know, when you ask, it may be a junior role like a product analyst or a product design, you know, coordinator type of role, or it may be a more senior role like an e-commerce director role. But in both cases, we're looking for people who are bringing in, you know, ideas and energy and the ability to get in and get stuff done. The other role that I mentioned to you, which is, you know, the e-commerce director role, you know, this is part of our growth story. This role would report directly into one of our C-suite executives and would be responsible for the overall strategy and execution of how we do e-commerce at Cotopaxi. And our business model is, you know, a multi-channel model. So we have retail stores. We do a wholesale business. We sell a lot of product through places like REI, for instance. But we sell an enormous amount of product online, too. And so we're looking for someone to come in with, you know, a lot of experience in this particular case to help us take our online business to the next level. And, you know, everybody says, take us to the next level. What does that mean? That means take what we've been able to build and has been extraordinarily successful as an online retailer and kick it into a new market, a market level. So we're looking to grow into overseas. We've got our eyes set on Europe as a very, very fascinating place. And we also want to be able to build the stickiness with our online customers. That'll help drive them into the retail stores as we open them and vice versa.
For that role, what would you say is more important, that proof of concept that they can grow or connections?
I think it's more the proof of concept that they can grow.
Okay.
You know, we're looking in this particular role, we're looking for, you know, 10 years of experience doing e-commerce. And this is part of who we are as a company. You know, we definitely move people around within, and there's a lot of opportunity, for example, in that more junior product design role for someone to come in and really nail it and move up and build their career at Cotopaxi. But we also recognize, you know, when we get to the point where we need outside perspective and fresh ideas and, you know, the ability to bring in someone who has scaled and grown a business to the extent that which we aspire to do that, then, you know, we're not afraid to say, you know what, we got to go outside and bring in an expert.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really glad that you highlighted two jobs at those different levels of a career, because we have a couple of audiences, and some of them are those MBA students that are really hungry for those junior roles and those people that have had a year or two of experience. And then another big audience is folks that really want to break into this industry, and they have those skills in other areas. So they're wizards at e-commerce, but they're looking for that chance to do it for their outdoor industry because maybe they, you know, they recreate too on the side. So it's really great to know. That's why I asked too about connections. It sounds like somebody with those hard technical skills would be welcome to apply, even if they haven't worked for an outdoor brand.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you step back and look at it, we're looking at people or looking for people who know how to grow a business, scale a business. And it doesn't necessarily have to be in the outdoor industry. Although, you know, online retail, I mean, you could be at Home Depot, you could be at, you could be at Prada. I mean, pick your company. But someone who's taken a business and really been able to grow it and scale it and drive that kind of agenda that we've got set for ourselves in the next couple of years.
Tell us a bit about how success is measured. This is another question that I ask in an interview. It's usually to the hiring manager, so they can tell you more individually, but on an employer level, does Cotopaxi do formal reviews?
Yeah, that's something that we're growing into. In fact, we're going to launch this spring. We did a pilot performance management process last fall to kind of get the kinks worked out and to get everybody on board with it. It was something that had been very informal and organic before I got there. And that's, you know, something that I brought to the table. So we did a pilot in the fall, got a lot of feedback. We've built it up. And we're going to be kicking off a performance review process actually the first quarter of this year. So we'll be doing it in the February, March timeframe. What we look for, Jenna, is really two things. We look for people who are able to deliver on their OKRs. We use a OKR process, although it's not as rigorous and dogmatic as some of them are. But we measure people on their ability to achieve results, which is really, really important. But we also measure people on their, what I like to call their cultural role model behaviors. Because culture is such a big part of Cotopaxi, and it's such a big part of what keeps our vibe the way it is, that, you know, we have a no-jerk policy.
Okay.
And you know, we don't like brilliant jerks. And so we tend to not hire brilliant jerks. And if we have one slips through the cracks, we try to fix that real fast. But it's back to this notion of being a cultural role model. So it's kind of a 50-50 proposition, you know, nail your business results, but also make sure that you are a positive, you know, addition to the culture, that you help drive us forward, that you're part of the vibe and part of the mission of doing good.
That's amazing. It also sounds like, just from a personal standpoint, you're getting to grow all of these programs from the ground up, which would be really exciting.
Yeah, that's, I mean, look, I've, as I said earlier, you know, the last 20 years of my life, I kind of fell into HR. I had no training at it whatsoever. I was actually a business strategy guy and got, you know, put into a role. That's another story. And learned it over time. But it's been really fun to be able to build this stuff from the ground up, because I do have, you know, a fair amount of experience that I could bring to the table at Cotopaxi, but I also had the ability to figure out how to bring that experience to bear in the context of a B corporation with a very strong mission focus. And that's been, honestly, you know, this has been maybe the most fun job I've ever had.
And Ted, I never even asked you if you're like an outdoors guy. Is that what brought you to Cotopaxi?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been a river guide. I've been a ski patroller. I've been an outdoor education instructor. You know, the outdoors has been a passion of mine since my grandfather took me out hunting and fishing as a little boy growing up in Georgia.
Cool.
So I always knew I wanted to end up in this industry. And my little journey, Jenna, was about building up a set of skills. I sort of did this parallel thing. So I worked in the outdoor industry, you know, helped build a company called Wilderness Medical Associates. We did medical training for outdoor instructors and all kinds of crazy things like that. 20 years as a ski patroller. So, you know, I kind of built up my outdoor resume in parallel with my corporate resume. And the method to my madness was, there's going to come a time when I can bring those two things together. And that happened to me about 10 years ago now, that I was able to take my corporate experience, and my first outdoor industry executive job was at backcountry.com. And I sort of did a thing that I've done at Cotopaxi, although on a different scale. At Backcountry, I came in and helped rebuild an HR team that had sort of fallen into disarray. And so I got to build from the ground up there. And that was how I got to know a couple of folks who are now colleagues on the executive team at Cotopaxi. They were folks that I'd worked with at Backcountry. So that's
okay.
How I got there.
Understood. Okay, thank you for that insight. And it makes a lot of sense that you have a deeply rooted love of the outdoors. Do you find that most of the team shares that, I would assume?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'd say probably, you know, 95%+ of the folks who work at Cotopaxi have some sort of, you know, outdoor passion that they love to engage in more than just dabble in. They're actually pretty darn serious about it.
Now, that's good to know. And obviously that would be then good to mention on a cover letter or in an interview, because that's skills alignment, value alignment. But what else are you looking for in candidates? Skills, attributes, what they do outside of their work time? What are you seeking?
Well, we're looking for, you know, in addition to the skills that you mentioned, and that we discussed a little bit on those two, the two featured jobs that we have open at the moment, we're looking for people who are going to help move the company and its vibe and its culture forward. So, you know, there's a lot of dialogue these days about the concept of culture fit and whether or not it's actually like, you know, we're looking to cram people into a box. And that's what culture fit is. I don't buy that notion. I know that there are places that do that. But I've never bought into that idea that culture fit was about forcing people to fit into an existing culture. What we look for is people who bring, you know, those hard technical skills and that energy and drive and commitment to getting stuff done. But we're also looking for people who align with our mission. We want to, you know, we'll ask people about, tell us how you've done good in your life. Tell us how you've provided service to others. How have you improved the lives of others in your community, or, you know, whatever that happens to be, because that's such a big part of who we are. And we're looking for people who bring, you know, that expertise, but bring it in a way that says, I can help bring what I know how to do into Cotopaxi and grow the company. And I can teach other people and fold my experience into the collective experience of the company in a way that helps us achieve our business and our social impact missions.
Would you say a lot of the executives and the managers, are you working often more than 40 hours a week? The reason I ask this is I've worked in tech before, I've worked in sport, I've worked in a lot of different industries, and in some industries, you just expect to work a little bit longer, in others you don't. So it's just expectation management.
Yeah, no, great question. We're certainly not a Silicon Valley tech business or a New York investment banker business where we want 100-hour weeks. That's not who we are. But yeah, there are times when you have to work hard. Like in the retail business, the fourth quarter of any year, that's kind of the make or break quarter. That's when you have Black Friday, Cyber Monday, all that sort of stuff that, you know, drives business revenue. And there's kind of an ebb and a flow to our work. So I won't say that we are the kind of company where you can come in and work a 40-hour, you know, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and just turn off at 5 o'clock and go away, because We're pretty passionate about getting the work done that we need to get done. But we're not a 100-hour a week company either. So we're probably somewhere in the middle. I mean, if you had to pin me down to a number, Jenna, I'd say we're in the probably, you know, 60-hour a week world as opposed to the 100-hour a week world.
Got it. So it's going to have to be something that you are truly passionate about, enjoy doing every day. You're going to need to like your work. And there's plenty of candidates out there that absolutely love what they do. Plus, Cotopaxi does so much for the world that I think that the fulfillment level would be quite high.
Yeah, it is one of the most fulfilling places I've ever worked. I mean, I say this, a lot of people that I've worked with over the course of my career will say, hey, what's it like to work at Cotopaxi? And my standard response is, I have never worked in a company where the degree of alignment between the company mission and its values is as tightly aligned with the individual employee's mission and values. It's just a phenomenal thing. And it's a special thing. And it really is, you know, I go back to the idea that one of the reasons I love working in this company is because of that factor. We just have this energy of people who are committed to what they do and they believe in it deeply. And they're passionate about it and are willing to really invest that differential effort to make things happen because they so strongly believe in what we do.
And if that resonated with somebody and they're like, that's the type of team I want to work for, I'm sure there's a ton of people saying that to themselves right now. What could they do to stand out? What could they, you know, submit with the application or do in addition to applying?
Well, I think some of the standard things, you know, in terms of really get to know the company, I mean, do some research on who we are and what we do and where we've come from and be conversant in that. Because we're, you know, that sense of buying into the mission and being part of something special, you really have to know what it is in order to be effective at being part of it. So I'd say, you know, do your homework up front and really learn about the company and who we are and what we do. And then I think the second thing that comes to mind is, you know, give us very concrete examples of how you've helped a business grow. You know, show us how you've delivered results. Show us how you can get in and take a clean white space and make something happen and really move things forward for a business enterprise. And then the third thing is give us a sense of who you are. You know, back to this idea of culture fit, again, it's not that we're trying to force fit people into boxes. We want to know who people are. We want to know what their passions are, where they focus their energy, how they contribute to society. You know, one of our strategic imperatives as a company is to end world hunger. And that's pretty darned ambitious. So if you're going to go to work in a company that says strategically one of our planks is to end world hunger, give us a sense of how you do that.
Yeah, or that matters to you or why it matters to you. Yeah, those are all good tips. And I mean, it sounds like you don't need something really fancy too. I mean, if you're not a graphic designer, don't design a website, put a sentence that says I did X and use clear numbers and just communicate whatever way will make you feel comfortable.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's interesting. We're in the middle of putting a deck together for our upcoming board meeting, and we were just on an executive team call this morning reviewing that. And, you know, one of the things I put in a slide that I put in the board deck was if you look at the number of applications that we get for any given job, it's in the hundreds. So we literally have, you know, like I could go online and tell you how many applications we have, but I'm not going to do that. But it would be in the hundreds for those two jobs that we discussed before. So two things that are going to make you stand out. One is know the company. And very quickly up front, give us a sense of how you can contribute to our mission and our business success. And the other thing is keep it short. You know, I see resumes come in that are, you know, 6, 8, 10 pages, and that's just too much. Highlight the things that are really meaningful and impactful, both on the business side and on the social impact side. And give us something that makes us say, hey, Jenna looks like a really interesting candidate. We should have a conversation.
Ted, people are on the fence about reaching out to somebody at the organization, trying to find the hiring manager and reach out, or not doing that, not bothering them maybe. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. I mean, one of the things that I've done over my career, and I think the rest of the team at the executive level would largely be aligned with this, is, you know, if you want to hit us up on LinkedIn, for instance, and say, I'm really interested, you know, that's just fine. But please work through the application process. You know, one of the things I don't do, for example, is if somebody, and this happens a lot, somebody will send me a note and say on LinkedIn and say, hey, can you put me in touch with a hiring manager for, you know, position X? And I have to respect my colleagues' time as much as they respect my time. I'm not going to give out the name of the hiring manager and his or her contact information, because that's just going to create clutter in their inboxes. And I don't mean that to sound uncharitable at all. It's more out of respect for my colleagues' time and their focus on doing the business side of the business. But that being said, please do come to our careers site. Please do apply through, you know, whether it's applying directly through us or whether it's through Indeed or some of the other online boards where we post positions. Do that. And every application that gets submitted online is tied in through our applicant tracking system so that the hiring manager has the ability to review both the cover letter and the resume. And the cover letter is really important. We get a lot of people who just send in a resume.
Really?
Yes, but if you can send in a resume with a two paragraph, you know, just succinct, here's who I am, here's what I love to do, here's my background, here's how I've made a difference. That's an enormous differentiator, because I don't know why, but you know, when you go to apply for something online, it's like, click here to download your resume. And people don't realize that, you know, maybe you do a 2-page submission, 1-page resume, again, back to being succinct, but the other page, the front page, would be just a little cover note that says, hey, Cotopaxi, here's who I am, here's what I've done, here's why I'm excited about this, this is why I think I'd be a great candidate, and my resume's on the next page.
Well, that's a hot tip, that just having a cover letter in itself, just having one, will set you apart. All right, that's a mind-blowing fact.
It's unfortunate, but that's true, Jenna. Having a cover letter will differentiate you.
Okay. And then another suggestion I had, I just want to reiterate what you're saying about go look up what Cotopaxi is about. Go look at your current e-com site, your current social channels, and make sure you dive into the application. Because if somebody does want to reach out, absolutely, I advocate for reaching out, but have a very specific question that shows that you've done your research. And yeah, you're right. Don't ask for a specific person. If your question is thoughtful and targeted, you'll get that question to the right person. If it's you, you can answer. If it is the hiring manager, you'll forward it.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, like LinkedIn is a wonderful tool, but I hate to tell you how many requests I get, like, hey, Ted, I'd love to connect with you. And that's it. And,
right.
You know, I've actually written on my LinkedIn page a couple of times about, you know, salespeople contacting me, which happens a lot. And also the candidate experience, you know, when you're networking with people, and that's the way you find great jobs, by the way, make sure that you recognize that if you're asking someone to give you some of their time in a networking situation, you need to respect that time and you need to be very focused on what it is that you want to talk about. And if you can send me a note and say, hey, I'm very interested in this position and I've done these three things and here's my background and I've got a couple of questions, would you be willing to spend some time with me? Then the answer is more often going to be positive as opposed to just a, hey, I'd love to join your LinkedIn network. And then after that, send me a resume. And then I'm like, well, what do I do with this?
You're right. Networking is really the key. Do you have any other tips? I'm sure you do.
Find people, if you can find somebody who you know or somebody who is a friend of a friend who works at Cotopaxi or has worked at Cotopaxi, make contact with them and ask them what it's like. Learn more about the business. It always helps to get that inside perspective. And I think also, you know, having a strong knowledge, again, back to who we are and what our mission is, you know, doing your research. That's a big one. One tip I'll give you right now for anyone who's listening, please proofread everything you send in. Spelling, look, I'm an old Latin teacher, and if I see a resume that has a spelling mistake in it, I'm going to not be very predisposed to talk to that person because it reflects carelessness, and we want people who are not careless. So make sure it's grammatically correct. Make sure that it's spelled well, the formatting works, and you know, don't send me the same resume that you sent to, you know, to IBM, because we're very different businesses.
You have worked at a very large non-outdoor industry company and a couple outdoor industry companies. What's the difference between getting a job in those? If somebody wants to break into the outdoor industry, what are the particular things they should be orienting toward or looking at that is maybe you wouldn't know if you're coming from outside of this vertical?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is to recognize that the outdoor industry is a business. You know, if you look at the OIA data, I mean, if I remember correctly, 6% of the United States GDP is coming out of the outdoor industry. It is a big factor in our economy. And unfortunately, there's a perception, particularly with people who are either breaking into it or new to it, that it's kind of a, hey, I'm going to go work in an outdoor company, and that means I'm going to have a lot of time to go skiing or paddling or, you know, whatever my recreational pursuit is. And you got to realize it's a business. And so I think that's maybe the most important thing I can point out, Jenna, is that recognize that people who work in the outdoor industry are very passionate about the outdoors. But we're also equally, if not more so, focused on the notion that we are running a business.
Yeah, that echoes Mitsu's advice from a couple weeks ago. This isn't a ski instructor role, you know, you still have to go to work during the day. And yeah, everyone else does love going skiing as well. But a lot of people have very romantic visions of working in the outdoor industry and kind of like you're going out with your buddies for hours and hours a day and kind of like work is secondary, and it is absolutely not. It is sometimes, like you said, there are seasons where it is almost grueling and there's a lot of competition in this industry as well, but you're right. There's so much potential in it as well. It is growing exponentially, and anybody that can say, here's how I will help you grow, is going to get the attention of really most companies. Nice.
Yeah, I would completely concur with that. And also recognize that, you know, you need to be on. I mean, you know, with the ubiquity of, you know, phones and Slack and, you know, all the different tools that we have, it doesn't matter, back to being remote, it doesn't necessarily matter where you are, but you need to be ready to go to work. I mean, I get up at 5:30 in the morning and I'm on my, you know, checking my email by 6:15. You got to work. It's not, you said it very well. It's not like a ski instructor job, which I've done, by the way, and that's equally.
And which is great if you want to go that route.
Yeah, and that's demanding. But if you want to build a career in an industry, you know, the things that help you be successful, I've worked in banking, I've worked in airlines, I've worked in retail, I've worked in nonprofits. And in each one of those cases, what helps you be successful and build a career is mastering your craft, meaning, you know, whatever function you're in, and really being, you know, extremely conversant and good at it, and having a great work ethic and understanding how to be part of a team, and how to contribute to that team's success and not being a jerk.
Just because you weren't in HR in the beginning, you said you sort of happened upon this career. Who else should be maybe looking into HR as a career path that maybe wasn't thinking about it, but like what skills would you say, hey, consider this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I have an MBA from the University of Virginia, which is a fairly, you know, top tier school. So I'm proud of having accomplished that. But even more than that, I have a background in business. And I think there are far too many people who work in, you know, whether it's people ops or HR or whatever you call it, who have come up through the ranks of HR function and have learned the craft, but haven't learned the business side of things. And so this is a real, you could get me going on this soapbox for hours. But if you want to get into HR and be successful at it, the first thing I'll say is don't tell me that you love people. That's why you want to get into HR, because unfortunately, you often see the dark, seamy side of people in HR. So you don't always love people. And that's just a reality. But understanding how the tools that you have in your toolkit enable the bottom line of a business is critical. And I've written a lot on that, and it's on my LinkedIn page, and there's videos, and if anybody really wants to drill into it, there's a lot of content there that you could look at. But I believe very passionately that the best strategic people, ops, HR, whatever you want to call it, the best leaders and the best folks in that function are the ones who understand finance, how a balance sheet works, how an income statement functions, how cash flow works. How margins are calculated in a business, you know, a lot of the hard financial techniques, because ultimately business is a context in which the language that's spoken is often numbers. And if you're conversant in the language of business, which is numbers, and you understand how to connect what you do to driving the bottom line of a business, then that's going to make you stand out from a crowd.
Yeah. And gosh, that applies to really any job at all, doesn't it? I mean, even if you're a marketer, being able to explain to the CEO why you want to do something in terms of hard cash, that's going to help everyone.
Exactly.
Love that. Okay. And I would also throw in, I think that people that are creative would be really great for HR roles, because selling the workplace, I think, is part of this. And just, you know, bringing an aspect of creativity to how to grow your team makes sense. You obviously have that aspect and you're inputting it in so many ways to make sure that your team is not only, you know, working toward their to do their best work, but feel they're most creative and they're most supported.
Yeah, I would completely support that. You know, being innovative and coming up with new ways to solve old problems is a great skill. And then I think the other thing, Jenna, that comes to mind for me is the idea that don't limit yourself to your functional domain. I'm a big believer in breadth versus depth. And, you know, it's important to have a strong foundation of expertise to build your career on, but reach outside the boundaries of it. If you're a marketing person, learn finance. If you're a finance person, learn product design. Because what really, when you move forward in your career, and if you aspire to taking on more senior roles over time, you've got to think more like a broad general manager than like a deep functional specialist. And deep functional specialists are critical to making things happen. And I have an enormous amount of respect for people who build their careers knowing a whole lot about a fairly narrow domain. But I will say that my personal bias is towards people who can engage in the conversation. If we're talking finance and you're an HR person and you can engage in that financial conversation, I think it adds value because you're bringing your frame of reference to the conversation in a way that your chief financial officer or your director of FP&A or whatever might not have thought of.
100%. And anybody that will take that is proactive enough to go to another department and seek to understand both their goals and their challenges is going to elevate the company immensely.
Yeah. And, you know, that actually that brings to mind a comment that when you asked earlier about tips, I love seeing people who take chances. And I love seeing people who, you know, are willing to take on a certain amount of risk because risk and reward go hand in hand. And so if someone's taken a risk in their career and moved into a different functional area for a couple of years and then come back to their home area, that just says a lot to me about someone who's got a mindset to learn and someone who's not afraid to try new things. That's an enormous asset.
I mean, yeah, that's an amazing point. You have to take a shot. There's often no downside to doing it. You just have to get over that fear a little bit. And oftentimes people call that failure, but what you're doing is you're getting data. It's just data. So stop being afraid of failure. You're being afraid of data, which is just silly.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Again, it's like, you know, build up a portfolio of experiences. The more interesting things that you've done in your career, the more I want to have a conversation with you because there's just more to talk about and more to learn from each other on.
Absolutely. Ted, was there anything else you'd like to add before we go?
No, I think this has been a great conversation. I love the fact that we started with an agenda and we kind of roamed on and off of it. That's really fun. But I would just encourage people, you know, back to where we started the conversation about working in the outdoor industry. I think the most important thing to recognize is that you've got to have passion for the industry, but you've also got to have some credible expertise and find a way to blend those two. Don't oversteer on one versus the other because there's a balance that needs to occur. And then the last thing is, you know, Cotopaxi is a very different company from Backcountry, where I used to work before. And you need to know the differences between the two and find a place where you're going to thrive. I like to suggest to folks that, you know, the most important consideration in any job you'll ever have is the people you work with, because you're going to spend a lot of time with them. So make sure that the people that you're going to work with are people that you click with, that you enjoy being around, and that you don't mind spending 10 or 12 hours a day when you have to. And then look for work that's challenging. Find a, you know, engaging thing for you intellectually that's going to keep you on your toes and keep you thinking. And then, you know, look for the culture that is a great fit for you and who you are. And that, of course, is partly people and partly business and partly opportunity. And then I think the last thing, I hate to say it, but the last thing is the money. I don't want to underestimate the money because it's important. We all need a job to pay our bills. But don't get into this business. If you want to get wealthy, go into consulting or investment banking. Don't go into the outdoor industry.
Yeah, do your thing for 10 years and then you can buy a mountain chalet.
Exactly.
Ted, this has been just full of wisdom. We thank you tremendously for being with us today. We're so excited to see Cotopaxi grow. And yeah, can't thank you enough for sharing your insight with our audience.
Well, and thank you so much, Jenna, for the invitation to do that, because I'm at a point in my career where I love to give back and I like to see smart people be successful. And hopefully I've offered a few little clues about how you might do that.